You're hearing voices.
My name's Scott Carrier, and I live around the corner down there on G Street.
You don't live around the corner here. I know just about everybody that lives on this block.
No, I do. I live down there. I live down there.
Where do you say you live?
Around the corner down there.
Down where?
I live down on G Street down there.
Mapping the streets, sidewalks, and trees from America to the old Soviet Union. Today from Hearing Voices and NPR, Street Map.
I'm here today to tell a story, a twisted story of ghetto glory. Now, I know you heard of Romeo and Juliet, but I bet you ain't heard of Rome and Net-Net. See, the story's a bit different.
Stories from one city block and across the ocean. From Ice Life, Scott Carrier, Larry Massett, and Youth Radio. I'm Katie Davis with Street Map. You know how when you open a map and then you try to get it folded back up again and you never can? Well, I'm going to open the map anyway. From NPR, this is Hearing Voices, supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Katie Davis of Neighborhood Stories. Today's show, Street Map, stories about the people next door. Scott Carrier, he knows what I'm talking about.
That's my dog. He's okay. And these are tapes I made in my neighborhood. Some are sounds I recorded around my house. Some are things I taped off the radio. And others are interviews with my neighbors. I live at 474 G Street, Salt Lake City, Utah, and this program is my neighborhood scrapbook.
I think I should like to use those marvelous words written by Parley P. Pratt as something of a theme. The morning breaks, the shadows flee, lo, Zion's standard is unfurled. The dawning of a brighter day, majestic, rises on the world. The clouds of error disappear before the rays of truth divine. The glory bursting from afar, wide o'er the nations, soon will shine.
Okay, well, I would wonder what my house is like from somebody who comes in from the outside. And so I try to meet it that way a lot of the time. And when I meet it from the outside, I'm real puzzled by it. This isn't the house that I thought I was designing for myself, but it's the house that happened up around me. This table's gone through 17 moves. And the other things have long histories of their own that they came to me with already. Somehow I kind of guard and cherish those histories, too, and what they do to my imagination. My grandmother's chair and my ex-husband's godmother's couch. But I'm kind of a Bedouin, I think. You know, I have had 18 moves in 20 years. I know how to pack it up and leave within one night and set it up someplace else. So if something dies on the way, it gets, you know, buried properly and left behind. This is how I've dealt with the outside world. This is what I've gone out and tried to structure a reality, and this is where it is. Do you know what I mean?
In neighborhoods I've lived in from the time I was a kid up till now, have always been cold. There's a fence that separates that lot from that lot from that lot. And this separation, by virtue of symbols like fences and gates and private property and so on and so forth, or even dogs that'll bite you if you dare go into the area. All of this has emphasized what I call the isolation of individuals and families from each other. And this hasn't been improved at all. There is a feeling of stay away from us. You do your thing, we'll do our thing. Now, there are exceptions to that, for sure. But if you don't have a fence, if you don't have a closed-off area, you're in trouble. And I think that's one of the most distasteful signs of society degeneration.
What we really have is we have a brand new 50-year-old kitchen. I like this space here. I invented this. I always hated pulling out bowls, even though you can stack them from a cupboard. They're always awkward. So this is just an open square area. It's just open on the front side. You can put, well, I guess there's about 12 bowls all stacked in here. You don't have to lift them out of anything. You can just pull them straight out and pull the bowl that you want. And this cupboard over here, it's pretty nice. I had him put a little shelf here to put the waffle maker on, and I can put, I have a pasta maker in the basement, you know, a narrow shelf, and underneath you can put the toaster and the coffee grinder. It all will fit. And then over here, there's so many of the kitchens, they just don't have a place for something tall. I can put my whole Cuisinart in here without taking it apart. Because, like, when you start having to stack it, it takes about 5 times as much space. And then I have some tall vases and jars and things. And I don't know, what do you think? Do you like it?
Dad was funny. He wanted us to be pretty and dressed pretty and have our hair done pretty and have pretty shoes on, and he wanted my brother to be, oh, a big he-man of a boy, you know. And it was funny. If he'd come home from work and we weren't just so, he'd have a fit and fall in it. So we were always just pretty. And clean. And, you know, I've wondered lots of times how in the world they ever kept people clean in this town. In the summer when it dries up, the dust just... And they didn't have... My mother used to wash on Monday with a great big boiler about this big. She'd put on a coal stove. And she'd dry it all and iron on Tuesday. And... Everybody had to have a bath Saturday night because we had to go to church Sunday morning spotless clean. And I mean spotless. And Dad would see to it, too. I don't know. They were funny. You see, there's a storm coming in right there. Looks like it might be going toward Tooele, don't it?
Hey! Hey! Son?
Yeah?
What are you doing up in that tree up there?
Well...
Huh?
I'm a neighbor of yours. I live around the corner.
What? Who are you?
My name's Scott Carrier, and I live around the corner down there on G Street.
You don't live around the corner here. I know just about everybody that lives on this block.
No, I do. I live down there. I live down there.
Where do you say you live?
Around the corner down there.
Down where?
I live down on G Street down there.
G Street?
Yeah.
G Street and what?
About 9th Avenue.
Well, what are you doing up in that tree?
Well,
you're acting like a damn fool. Now come on down. That's over 20, 30 feet high. If you fall down, God knows what, I'm responsible and it'd be a hell of a mess. Now come on down.
Just let me stay up here a little bit longer. I'm almost done.
No, I'm not gonna let you stay up there one more minute. And if I could, I'd climb up and take you down by the seat of the pants.
Good Lord,
you can't even have a tree on your property anymore for fear that a fool like yourself is going to climb up it and fall off. Come on down. Are you going to force me to call the cops?
Please, Father, wilt thou bless us with the power to remember and to recall the special feelings we have at this moment. We know, Father, who we are, and we thank thee for this knowledge and testimony, and do so in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Tone 4 hours, 21 minutes, coordinated universal time.
Well, I bought this house from a friend of mine who moved to San Francisco about 12, 13 years ago. And the house was, I've heard that it's the oldest house above 6th Avenue. And so at any rate, I bought the house and have been very involved in restoring it. And now most of the house is done except this old lean-to kitchen, which I use as a practice room. And it's the funkiest room in the house, but ideal for my purposes. I've got all my records in here and microphones and that, and can spread all my music and rosin, metronomes, bows, what have you, out and leave it out and not always have to be putting it away. So it's very convenient for me to use that right now. And I'll play a little piece just so you can hear what it is I do on the bass. This is the first movement of a sonata by Alessandro Scarlatti in D minor.
Thank you. why don't you come this way? I'll show you the basement. But anyway, this is just kind of a, I don't know, we jokingly call it the ballroom because it's so large, runs the entire length of the house, which is pretty great. The previous owner said his son used to have a band, and this is where they practiced. But someday I'd like to maybe get a pool table or something in here. And then I have lots of closet space. Got a little cedar closet in here. You know, it's nice. I don't know. Turn this into a sauna or something. That'd be pretty great. Come on this way. I'll show you. We got quite a few bedrooms down here. Here's a... This is kind of a root cellar. It's got the dirt floor. And I tell my mother that when she retires, this is the room she can have. As long as she brings her own rake, we're calling this her room. And then this is where I keep my motorcycle. You want me to start it for you?
Down here?
Yeah.
I pick up rocks that I find are interesting. I don't really do it because I think they're rare gems or, you know, rare rocks, you know, some agates and things like that. I pick them up because they're interesting. They kind of look like, this one here looks like it came from outer space. It's some kind of agatized rock. It's got oranges and purples and whites and... I mean, you know, that orange is almost the color of a crab's back after it's been cooked. And that purple is a, well, it's kind of hard purple to describe. It's a waxy texture. And it's a darker, almost a mixture of a purple and an ox blood red. Why did I pick this one up? It looks like there's a lot of fossils in it or of some sort, just little pieces of some kind of fossilized material right through here and right through here and through here and right through here. Just curiosity.
My name is George Nay, N-A-Y, but I belong to the Full Gospel Businessmen Fellowship International. And at 16 years old is when I found the Lord as my personal Savior, was baptized with the Holy Ghost and spoke 2 hours in the Spanish language that I had never learned. Just the camp meeting we had here at Parowan this fall, in July, it was around the 4th of July, the camp meeting. One night, 150 people received fillings in their teeth the Lord put in. And the Lord puts in gold, he puts in silver, and he makes teeth white also. So Jesus makes the difference. We just love every one of you and appreciate you. The Lord bless you.
Do you want me to read my poem to W.S. Merwin?
Let's see it.
me see if that's the one.
This is the one to Merwin. I gave him an answer. I said dead hands, ha ha. You may talk about the basilisk, Merwin. I'll tell you about dead hands. It's got nothing to do with letting...
People don't know him, so they won't...
Let the rings fall. Dead hands, I know dead hands. But I stare like the basilisk at these two lines of Merwin's, and yet I know dead hands. Once warm, caressing my silk, my skin, before they turn to wax in the casket, with veins vanished after life's red was sucked away in that hushed morgue. Dear God, do they run that blood down the drain? We are not going to go on with this, Scott. That's not... I'm not going to finish that. There's a simple little poem in here. There's a simple little poem that isn't so bloody. Y'all? No, I'm not talking to you. Go away.
It might be.
I don't give a damn. It's not. We're not talking to them.
Okay.
We don't have to. Just because that phone rings, why should a person have to talk to a phone? Someone terrible. I know it is. I know that it is someone terrible.
Your father.
No, that's why I know it's someone terrible. It isn't father. It isn't family. It isn't girlfriends. It is someone terrible. I am not getting it. That means it's a man. Stop it. I'll unplug you.
Scott Carrier's Neighborhood was produced for Soundprint. Coming up on Street Map, we'll run down to the corner store and get lost in Batumi in the old Soviet Union. Stay tuned. I'm Katie Davis with Hearing Voices.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. And the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
This is Street Map from Hearing Voices, the best of public radio. When I was little, the summer sun in Washington, D.C. got the tar bubbling on our street. The trees, though, they created shade islands, and that's where we stopped as we ran down the block.
Clap your hand, huh? Stomp your feet. Clap your hand, huh? Stomp your feet.
Going to the corner store for candy when I was 10 years old was dicey in a couple of ways. Warren Butts could jump you and take your 50 cents. Or worse, take it, then make you go buy him a pig's foot. On other days, the bulbous namesake of our neighbor Dick could be on display in a basement doorway, naked and waving. Don't look, don't look, don't look, we'd say, but we always did.
Hey, huh. Stomp the beat, huh. Stomp your feet. Clap your hands.
Past the firehouse, past Tuffy's 57 Buick, down the street of chimney to chimney row houses. Jump the square with Peyton's blood still staining the concrete. Don't step on it or he'll come back to get you. Down, 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 all the way down to the corner store. Look in first to make sure that dog is behind the counter, not pacing the aisles. Wayne, the owner, was a bloated white guy with a buzz cut who drove in from Virginia every day to take our quarters. He brought his German Shepherd, also white, to give customers the double hard stare. Whites were scared in 1968, as if the stores were still burning just blocks away on 14th Street. They really could still see Soul Brother spray-painted on the doors of black homes and stores. It meant, don't burn this place, we're not the enemy. Lucky's dad swears that's what saved their house during the riots. Wayne was usually sitting on a milk crate behind the store counter. his large butt dripping over the edges. He didn't say much, and I never touched his fingers when I gave him my money. In and out as fast as I could. Wayne didn't like anyone in the neighborhood, black or white, and he let you know it. We knew the dog would bite you with just a nod. At 11, I was bolder. I'm going to the corner, I'd announce. My brothers and friends sat dangling their legs off the firehouse wall and gave me orders. I want a Slim Jim, two pretzels, a jawbreaker, eight Mary Janes, all that, and a pack of Camels for Lefty, the hook and ladder driver who played football with us. Make the trip, keep the change. Or you could be spoiled like little Hester Nelson. She had her own tab at the corner store.
And I was a candy freak at a very young age, about 6 years old. I was a really scrawny kid, and I never ate anything but candy. So one day I decided, well, I'm going to have my candy connection secured. So I decided, okay, I'm going to set up an account, and I'll just have them bill my mother and father every month. So I remember one month having like this outrageous bill. But I owed like $100, which was a lot of money, and I would buy candy for everybody, and that's why everybody loved me.
Hester used her candy to strike bargains. I'll give you these now and laters. I get to borrow your hula hoop. By that time, though, Maddie already owned the store.
Come on.
I'll go be over you.
Maddie bought the corner store from Wayne about a year after the riots. And she hung a sign out front with her name in daffodil yellow. New smells mingled with the wash of ammonia. Sausages hissed from a twirling spit, and red hot peppers hovered in a jar like a lava lamp. The aisles had Crisco, Twinkies, and Hostess cherry pies, names so spry we double dutched to them. Crisco, Twinkies, cherry pie, you jump in, so do I. Maddie carefully wrote down the daily numbers, whispered by the adults. I want 512 boxed, or give me 322 straight for $5. Her thick cinnamon wrists were glazed with sweat every morning as she shoved the dollars and slips of papers into her apron pocket. The same people would drop by later in the afternoon to see if they hit the number. That was the best time to crouch by the bottom row of candy and listen to the gossip. Yes, she caught him in the bathtub. Stuck him right in the gut. Shh, there's kids here, Maddie would say.
Time out.
In the summer, we'd make the trip barefoot, attempting long jumps from tree box to tree box, cooling our feet in the silky dust all the way down to the corner store. Freeze pops were held first to our foreheads and then to our tongues. Or Maddie would sell us half a popsicle. Don't try to break it, let me do it, she'd say. We'd go back later for the other half. In August, with no air conditioning, ice was an all-day affair.
Oh, you're gonna get it now.
Maddie's became home base. Touch it, you're safe. Once in the fifth grade, I ran all the way across the Calvert Street Bridge after school with Bobby tearing after me because I wouldn't give him a kiss. I jerked open the screen door to Maddie's and shot in. Then I began poking through the bottles of Rock Creek sodas, stalling. Maddie shot me a look. Are you rearranging my sodas? Then Maddie glanced out the front window and came from behind her counter and cracked the screen door. Now go on, Bobby, and leave this girl alone. Bobby pimped away to keep face, but he left. Corner store safety zone. Maddie's sign is still there. The Kims just left it up when they took over from her almost two decades ago. Mr. and Mrs. Kim were unassuming like that, making change quietly. The jangly screen door that always punctuated my trip was unhinged, and a glass door bolted in. They hired Mohammed from Sierra Leone to help stock Dove bars next to the freeze pops, tofu next to the fat back, and organic linseed bread alongside the sugar pops. The new inventory list captured the changing people in my neighborhood in the 1980s. For a while, black, Latino, and white tastes all blended together, not so much anymore. Anymore, the cases are packed with gourmet food.
This is Demax, right?
Yes.
Finest, baby Havari. Baby Havari. Okay. This is the Laughing Cow original. Laughing Cow. Yeah, Laughing Cow. Oh, Lord, that's good to know.
It was about 5 years ago that the two-minute trip to the corner store began to take me 20, sometimes 25 minutes. One day, Fernando sauntered up, sipping a cup of tea. And he told me that his elderly next-door neighbor, Mrs. G, had taken to bathing with a hose in her front yard. Oh, dear. Then Judith, the lawyer, well, she stopped me to report that the same Mrs. G had been seen feeding the rats in her front yard. Really, Judith? Have you seen her? No, she said, but Bibi has. And since I am the self-appointed troubleshooter of the block, I went to talk with Mrs. G. I told her that the neighbors are worried that she's getting too old to take care of herself. Her filmy blue eyes flashed. If they're so worried, why don't they bring me a plate of hot food every now and then? At the corner store, the spill of news is constant. One afternoon, I walked down and Mrs. Kim warned me that she'd overheard two community leaders back by the potato chips planning out an entire strategy against me and the mural I'd commissioned for the park. They're just jealous. Ignore them, she advised. Another day, Salah, the owner of the local gas station, blew into the store seething because I wrote a letter on behalf of my neighbors asking that he clean up his property. I stood at the counter as Salah cursed me loudly, a rosy flush creeping up to his ears. Mohammed kept right on punching in lottery numbers, but he met my eye with a protective gaze. And Mrs. Kim slipped her hand over mine and just held it there. I've learned that the shouting and the holding usually come together in my neighborhood. When it gets to me, I'll go out the back door and drive to the 7-Eleven to buy anonymous milk with no demands. I am always pulled back, though, to that long walk down my street, to the place where I am looked after and must do the same. A street can turn on a person. The corner store owner puts up a plastic barrier at the counter. Trust can fray and break. When that happened in East Oakland, poet Ice Life returned to a story we all know. And he asked Youth Radio to be his backup in the telling.
I'm here today to tell a story. A twisted story of ghetto glory. Now, I know you heard of Romeo and Juliet, but I bet you ain't heard of Rome and Net-Net. See, this story's a bit different. A bit more explicit. So sad, almost all bad, they young, beautiful, and don't even know. Society tell him to be a thug, they tell her to be a... They victims of the system placed on us years ago.
Where are we at right now, Bianca?
78th Avenue.
And can you describe what you see out here? Like
liquor stores, nail shops. I don't know. These look like a whole bunch of people socializing.
This is your neighborhood?
Yeah. I try not to go outside at night. I mean, because you never know. You might get killed.
Let me tell you how Rome and Net-Net first met. She was standing at the bus stop, sucking on a lollipop, short skirt, short top. Girl, you need to stop. You wearing summer clothes and it ain't even hot. Net-Net ain't the only one to blame. A number of things make her do what she do. Her mama wasn't ever really there and her dad died when she was 2. Yet and still up she grew. And out she grew. Maybe a little too fast because the drunk man on the corner said, "Damn, girl, look at your ass." And she laughed, not knowing she being disrespected. She look up and see Rome coming from the other direction.
When I get off the bus, all I see, the first thing I see is a prostitute on the corner who's pregnant and who's like probably 20-something years old. And that's just depressing. I mean, it's like, dang, she has so much, she could do so much more of her life. I mean, if the homicide rate keeps climbing, you just can't, you can't just live, I mean, because it's affecting everybody. I mean, you never know if that bullet is going to come and hit one of your children.
Right now, we're at a point where I don't like my child to be out at night without knowing exactly where she is or picking her up directly from BART or from the place where she was, because stray bullets are everywhere. You know, I had a visitor at my home and stray bullets hit the car, and, you know, it could have easily been a person. So it's not a very fair situation.
Now here come Rome fronting on his cellular phone because his credit got denied when he tried to get it turned on. Looking dumb, with weed in his socks and cracking his gums, he walked down the street throwing up where he from. He see NetNet pretend to hang his phone up. He touched his pager like he being blown up. He said, "Damn, baby girl, what's your name? What's your steez? Why you got that skirt on? It's only like 40 degrees. She said, "Please," but she was getting sick, so she sneezed. "Ha, chew," he said, "bless you." She said, "Nah, forget you. You don't know me well enough to be talking about my clothes and all that kind of stuff." My bad, baby girl. I'm just looking out for your health. By the way, let me introduce myself. My name is Rome. Can we chop it up, talk on the phone?" "No, why?" "Why, because you fine, and I know you tired, because all day you've been walking through my mind." No, he didn't use that tired line, but she tripping, so you know what she say. Okay, that's so sweet. You the man I always wanted to meet."
My girlfriend and I have only been together for about 2 or 3 weeks. We come from such the same background in Oakland. Her mom lives on 94th, and I live on, my mom lives on 23rd. It was interesting because at the time when we were younger, since I was like more of a square kind of a person, you know, we could have been friends, but I also could have been someone that she thought was square. Like, I used to carry a briefcase to school, and I wanted to be a scientist. Then I wanted to be a stockbroker. I wasn't trying to be a thug at all. When you were younger, did you used to go outside and play?
Yeah. I used to live in the East on the 23rd, East 23rd, and it was just like I played all the time, but I wasn't really aware of things that were happening.
NetNet get pregnant. 9 months later, the saddest day of the year, she holding this beautiful baby girl, but her face drops tears as she sings her daughter a sad lullaby song, because Rome died in a drug deal going terribly wrong. You see, Rome died. Never got to see his newborn baby girl's eyes. Now he's not there to wipe the tears from NetNet's eyes. NetNet puts down the baby cries. NetNet goes in the kitchen and gets a kitchen knife. NetNet slits her wrist not once, NetNet slits her wrist twice. Suicide.
The only time you talk to your neighbors really is like if you see them outside and you say hello and good night or whatever. You never like talk about real issues, things that are really important. It's not always, you can't always like wait around and think that everybody else is going to do it. You need to take some action for yourself. And I think we kind of lost that, like our generation.
At 10 years old, the daughter says, "Both my parents died." At 13, she curses the parents she never really knew. "Forget my mama and my daddy, forget him too." And at 16, she's standing at the bus stop, sucking on a lollipop. Short skirt, short top, because y'all, we need to stop. We be wearing summer clothes like it ain't even hot, leaving our problems to be solved by somebody else. Then we wonder why history always repeats itself, repeats itself. Why history always repeats itself. Roman NetNet's in 62, 72, 82, 92, and now in 2002, because through all the madness, we laugh at the little ghetto kids on the bus stop.
Poet Ice Life in Oakland Scenes, Snapshots of a Community by youthradio.org, with Gerald Ward II, Bianca Yarborough, and her mom, Bridget Taylor. You're listening to Street Map from Hearing Voices. History can repeat itself, or in some cases get lost, for a while or forever. That's how it is in Batumi, a port on the Black Sea near Turkey. The city was once part of the Soviet Empire, and Larry Massett traveled there a few years ago with his friend Alex. This was Larry's first visit to Batumi. For Alex, it was a homecoming.
My friend Alex and I have been walking around Batumi
the whole day looking for the train ticket office. Not the train station, that's a piece of cake, but the little cubbyhole of an office that sells the tickets. It has to be here someplace, right? It was here a couple of weeks ago when we first arrived.
We checked out three locations pointed by different people. In each new location, they told us, no, they moved from here. So eventually we made it all the way across town, nearly dying in the process from the heat. After being pointed by different people to about five different directions, we finally arrived at the place to learn that we arrived too early. And if you want to get a railway ticket, you get it 2 or 3 days in advance, but not earlier than that.
Fine, but now it is 2 or 3 days before we need to leave, and the ticket office has moved again. In fact, it seems to have vanished altogether. A lot of things have vanished in Batumi over the years. The Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Russian Empire, most recently the Soviet Union. You find a wall here, a bridge there, an old fort. Just now we went by an opera house put up in the 1900s. Isadora Duncan used to dance here, they say. Cows graze on the lawn.
Going to places you grew up in is always a little bit depressing, and every time the city looked a bit smaller, which is okay, which I guess is just part of growing up. But it was distinctively seedier and shabbier every time. Where are those luxurious royal palms we used to have in the main square? Gone and not replanted. Where is this? Where is that? What happened to those fountains? And on it goes. Every time the city was more and more shabby, more and more third-worldish.
We walk down narrow, half-paved streets. Grapevines climb the whitewashed walls. Laundry flaps from wooden balconies. People are hawking watermelons, tomatoes, brooms. We both see what's here, but Alex sees what's gone.
First, the Greeks started to emigrate in the 70s when it became possible, and the Jews left in bulk, and most Russians are gone back to Russia.
Alex's family has roots in Lithuania and Azerbaijan. The point is, they're not native.
A person like myself, you were born here, yet you always had this feeling, and not just because you were paranoid. You were led to feel foreign here and somewhat second-rate citizen because you were not ethnically right.
Well, I argue, but you're like the Romans or the Turks, all those other colonists. When the empire goes belly up, all you can see is decline and fall. The local people must feel a lot more cheerful, don't you think? Oh, yes, he says, navigating a pothole the size of a bathtub. Yes, everyone agrees things are better now compared to the 90s, anyway. Right after the breakup of the Soviet Union. Those were the dark years, the time of chaos.
It's exactly at the height of that chaos that my father died. You know, when he died in the hospital here, there were no drugs in that hospital. They couldn't give him pain relievers. They would give him IV with my sister holding a candle by the flickering light of a candle because there was no electricity in the hospital. There was no electricity, period. Like that. So those were the years.
Now we're in the Turkish market. We don't imagine the train ticket office is here, but who knows? This is a real bazaar with an endless warren of little stalls selling car engines, nails, gold, ladies' underwear, cement, glue. Alex is hoping to find some electrical transformer part for his sister. I know for sure you can buy electric fans here. I'm about to acquire my third fan in 2 weeks. It's odd about the fan. I'll explain. This is the back porch of the apartment where Alex's mother lives. I've been sleeping out here, and this, see this, is an ordinary floor fan. 5 foot tall, white plastic with blue blades. About $10.
Next to it is an identical fan, and next to that another one, and another one. Why so many fans? Well, the fan on the far left, fan number one, was here when I got here. When it's running, it can bring the temperature down to a soothing 99 in the shade. But as soon as I leave to get a glass of water, Alex's mother sneaks out on the porch and turns it off. I come back out, turn it on. The minute I'm not looking, she turns it off again. Is she worried about the electric bill? No, she says. Only if you keep using the fan, it'll break. Right. Let's not use the fan. All the same, I flick it on just before going to sleep. In the morning, it's dead. Huh. Must be a lemon. Get a new fan from the market. Turn it on, go to sleep. And what do you know? It dies during the night. It occurs to me the fans in Batumi are like the cars, the buses, the phones. Nothing works. The toilet in this apartment hasn't flushed in 10 years, I'm told. No one even tries to fix it. We just haul water from the bathtub, when there is water. So, the new fan is an experiment in post-colonial decay. I want to see exactly how long it will operate in broad daylight while being observed. Okay, ready? I'm going to kick it on. Here goes. Starts right up. The blade is kind of scraping the cage, but that's all right. How ridiculous. It's not going to break while I'm staring at it. And then, just at the 5-minute mark, 57, 58, 59... Kaboom! All hell breaks loose in the sky. Monsoon. The city's gonna flood for days. The fan quits in a puff of smoke. Wind knocks over the potted geraniums. Alex's mother surveys the wreckage. Good work, she says. Why don't you buy one more fan? Maybe it'll snow. Rain or not, Alex wants to visit the botanical gardens on the edge of town, a favorite spot from his childhood. There is just about zero chance the train ticket office will have moved out here. I'm afraid we're starting to wander.
I remember there were flowers all over. I mean, there were all the roses and the exotic plants that nobody knew the names of. All of them gone for some reason, I don't know.
The Japanese goldfish ponds are still here, but it looks like somebody has eaten the fish.
The garden actually was of some world renown. It was one of a handful of this sort of landmark, colonial, imperial-style gardens. The townsfolk have taken whatever is portable, all the azalea bushes. They're carving out chunks, sort of condemning chunks of the garden all over, along the edges. It's prime land for growing tangerines, of course, so who cares? Just plant some more tangerines here.
Batumi, he says, was the only place in the whole Soviet Union where you could grow tangerines. They came ripe in January, the height of winter in Moscow. Imagine the profit you could make smuggling tangerines up to Russia. This was a wealthy city.
You see all these huge three-story farmers' houses, which are quite large even by American standards. That was all paid for with tangerines. So tangerine was really keeping it all together, but it only could work in a closed socialist economy, of course, once Russia could get its tangerines anyplace in the Mediterranean, cheap Moroccan, Spanish stuff. The bottom entirely fell out of it.
We never could find the train ticket office, but Alex's mother has decided to throw us a farewell dinner with the best china and the best wine and the best chicken she can stew up on her one tiny ceramic hot plate. The stove doesn't work. Did I mention that? The room is stuffed with books and bric-a-brac, and the piano no one can play. All the luxuries of the old Soviet intelligentsia. Until she retired, Alex's mother taught Russian literature at the Merchant Marine Institute. The Soviets believed sailors ought to know Pushkin and Tolstoy before heading out to sea. The institute is gone now, of course. Like the train ticket place. Nobody seems to mind, though. Maybe we just bribe the conductor when we get on the train. Or someone says, maybe the train doesn't run anymore. Maybe you can't leave. You'll have to stay here forever. Why not? Why not? This is home.
This is home.
Goodbye, Batumi was produced by Larry Massett for The Savvy Traveler. Larry also produced our show today. Links to all the producers you heard in this hour, Street Map, are at hearingvoices.com. I'm Katie Davis of Neighborhood Stories.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.